We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The long snap will come from Jake McQuaid. The holder is Johnny Hecker, the punter. It's on the near hash. 57-yarder for the Super Bowl. Ball put down. Right-footed kick is up. End over end, arching up, and it is caught! He got it! The Rams win! The Rams are going to the Super Bowl! The Los Angeles Rams have come back, and the first time they've taken a lead is on the game-winning field goal.
Call from Kevin Harlan at Westwood One. The Los Angeles Rams beat the New Orleans Saints 26-23 in overtime and are headed to Super Bowl 53. We're going to get into it in just a moment. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-KARS, the number 4 KIDS. And it now, as promised, is my pleasure to welcome in Joe Curley. Joe is a sports reporter, covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star, and you can follow him on Twitter at VCS Joe Curley. Joe, I do appreciate you taking time out for us this evening, and I'm guessing it's been a busy 24 hours or so for you out in LA.
Yeah, a pretty busy couple weeks. We're not used to having to work like this in January and February for NFL season. It's all a bit new.
You know, Joe, it was just an incredible day of football. Were you with the team in New Orleans? Were you covering from LA? Where were you at yesterday?
No, I was at home in LA, but certainly, which gave me the perspective of both those games, which were so similar in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. But it was something. I was at a watch party full of actual Los Angeles Rams fans, and then I was actually there at the facility when the team returned in the middle of the night, and there was all kinds of fans in the dark. So, like I said, we're all it's all new out here. So,
well, and the reason I asked the question is you did get to see both games. I thought it was. I've been doing this over 40 years. I thought it was possibly the best day of football I had ever seen. Those two games, kind of breathtaking. I didn't think it was interesting. I didn't think either the Rams or the Saints played their best games. I thought the Patriots absolutely played their best game. The Chiefs did in the second half. But nonetheless, it was just compelling football and entertaining and real highs and lows, both for individual players and both teams, particularly in that Saints-Rams game. And we'll get to the non-call in just a minute. I thought the turning point of the game was halfway through the first quarter when down 3-0, the Saints pick off Goff on the deflected pass in the red zone, and the Rams hold them to 3-and-out and force them to kick a field goal to keep it at 6-0. At that point, kind of had a sense the Rams were going to be there all day.
Yeah, I really thought it was interesting that you look at the Saints and the Patriots, and you can make an argument that both teams, you know, either shoulda or had a really good opportunity to be up 3 touchdowns. Obviously the Brady end zone interception, and then the two kind of the Saints had gone 5-0 in the red zone, or 5-for-5 in the red zone in the the previous game when the teams met in week 9, and instead they you have the end zone drop, a tough catch, and he can't on the first drive and the second drive they don't cash in off that off the turnover. And so, I really thought at that point the Rams were fortunate to only be down 6, and then even when it was 13-0, it really could have been 3 touchdowns for both those teams. We got, two really competitive games considering they both were kind of on the cusp of blowout city there in the first half.
Joe, we know what the narrative is coming out of New Orleans about the non-call, the pass interference. It was a horrible call. There's no question about that. What is the reaction in L.A. at this point? People just trying to ignore it. Does anybody feel the Super Bowl trip is tainted? Think that people are making too much of it? What's the reaction out there?
Yeah, you know, I think it's super. It's pretty interesting where you get. I think Rams fans, you know, felt like, you know, they didn't get a whole bunch of calls during the game, and it's kind of, you know, they get put through the ringer. Where now, you know, obviously the most glaring, you know, quote unquote blown call or mistake or whatever you want to call it, goes for them, and so they spent like, you know, 3.5 quarters of the game complaining about, you know, being a road team in the playoffs. And, you know, I thought that the officiating, they definitely, you know, in both games really, you know, for the most part, let the teams really play. You know, certainly you can get a sense that the officiating, you know, changes in the postseason, maybe even to a, you know, even more glaring manner this week, this previous week. But, you know, I think, you know, the Sean McVay himself came out after the game and, you know, called it a bang bang play, said he hadn't seen the video. We just finished the presser here with him today, and he obviously clarified those remarks, saying, you know, once you slow it down, it obviously you know, was a foul. But then, you know, he also brought up kind of the argument that a lot of Rams fans are making online, you know, bringing up the potential Jared Goff face mask, you know, on a, you know, which would have meant, you know, a first and goal at the 1 or the 2 rather than a field goal attempt for the Rams. And, you know, I do think that it is really kind of funny. You know, we talk about, you know, such a great day of football. And, you know, I think there's a greater discussion. There's just a lot coming out today about changes need to be made. And, you know, there, you know, all kinds of reforms. I thought it was a pretty good year for NFL referees. I didn't think it was, you know, certainly we've had a lot more controversial issues in the past. I thought obviously this past week was, you know, it's really the only bad thing of a, you know, out of a great week of football. But I felt like it was pretty, you know, you had the catch, you know, they finally calmed down the what is a catch issue. You know, I can't, you go through this year and I don't really see a ton of games that were, you know, decided by a glaring referee problem. And I know that, you know, so I found that the, you know, the storyline today about how there needs to be officiating reform in the NFL kind of, you know, I think it's just kind of, you know, because this is all fresh in our mind from, you know, certainly a bunch of referee, you know, call issues from the weekend, you know, the only kind of pockmarks in what was a beautiful weekend of football.
We're visiting with Joe Curley. Joe covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star. And Joe, I've got the question I've been dying to ask you since I knew you were coming on. I've been dying to ask somebody for a couple of weeks now. And I don't say this facetiously or to be a smartass or anything like that. I'm really curious. I never got a sense after the Raiders left and after the Rams left that anybody in Los Angeles was all that upset about it. As a matter of fact, the reality is TV ratings went up for a while because there were better games being shown. The Rams came back. The league was determined to put a team back in Los Angeles, ends up with two teams back in Los Angeles. How big is the Rams fan base out there? I mean, is it rabid? Is there a large group? Have they all come back? What's kind of the attitude out there right now?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, during that 20-year absence, there was a small diehard group that, you know, since I've become to know, you know, since I've gotten to know them, and, you know, it's really impressive, because the funny thing about it is living in LA the last 20-25 years, I basically came to LA right when the Rams and Raiders left it, and, you know, the LA that I know is the LA without professional football, the LA where you do get 4 games on a Sunday, the LA where you're surrounded by Packer fans and Steeler fans and Patriot fans and Bears fans and this melting pot of NFL fans. The NFL never left Los Angeles. There's just no games here on Sunday. And so, you know, that was the backdrop from which the NFL returned. But the Rams come out of St. Louis, and honestly, if you'd have ranked my familiarity with NFL teams from 1 to 32 as somebody who had the package and rabidly, watched all the cuts and tried to watch every game, and I probably knew less about the Rams than any team in the NFL when we were meeting Havenstein and Hecker. And, Donald was probably the one, Aaron Donald was probably the one player I could name off the top of my head when we were meeting the Rams. But, it's funny how, that feels so long ago now. And there really was this small, rabid group of Rams fans that worked behind the scenes and, created Facebook groups and when the Rams came out here to practice, they showed out in big numbers and showed the NFL that they were still here. And since the Rams have returned, you really feel great for these people that, you have this unrequited love that comes back in their life. And now they're back in the Coliseum where they were with their dads. And it really is a great story of, love lost and loved returned. And they get the fact that the stadium was moved back a year, to me, there was a silver lining that they got more playoff games in the Coliseum, which the franchise determined was not good enough for the Rams in 1979, but, have since, become, we're playing NFL in this, this classic venue. And now you do, the bottom line is Los Angeles is a city where if you win, the fans come out. And I think a lot of people expected that Cowboys game, the divisional game, to be filled with Cowboys fans and to be kind of what we saw with the Packers game, where there was a loud kind of minority of Packer fans in the stands, and maybe some of the Eagles games, which were pretty 50-50. But in the playoffs, just like the Atlanta game last year, the Rams fans really came out. The season ticket holders held onto their tickets, and it really was an LA Ram dominated home field advantage. And in that old building, so many of these old buildings have better home field advantages than the new ones. And you did feel, that home field advantage. So, again, I didn't really see it when the move happened, but I've been impressed with, the diehard group that was here, for 20 years waiting for the team to come back, work to get them back. And then, you go to the store now and there's Jared Goff jerseys and Aaron Donald jerseys. And, you're seeing, my kids, when my kid goes to school, the crossing guard's wearing a Rams hat. So, slowly but surely, this team's winning, and that's the one thing you have to do in LA to gain fans.
So, Joe, what should we expect in Atlanta? Is Rams Nation going to travel? The Super Bowl is always kind of a fan showdown, too. With Patriots, yeah, they may get to go every year, but we know they still travel well. What do you think is going to happen with the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, I think you wonder how many Patriot fans are starting to think maybe this is the last rodeo, so maybe they dig deep and try to make that move. I think I've been impressed with the way Rams fans have traveled, throughout the playoff. The game the other day, there was, you saw those scenes of those Rams fans celebrating the victory. So, I do think, I know a couple fans, I went out to the, where the team returned yesterday. I talked to fans and they were talking about, oh, I didn't win the lottery. I'm going to shell out. You get a sense that, you are going to have some of these, diehard LA Rams fans make that trip because they consider this their first Super Bowl since 80, since the Rose Bowl and Terry Bradshaw, the ones that turned their back on the team when they went to St. Louis. So, you have that a little bit. And then the game itself, I'm really excited about, Bill Belichick against, and Tom Brady against Wade Phillips again, and, everything that entails. I think the two teams match up in ways that it's going to be an entertaining, kind of enthralling game. And you see the lines already pretty tight. And so, probably going to be pretty close to a pick 'em game. So, in a place like Atlanta too, where you've got great storylines from the old guard and the new guard to the, Sean McVay returning home and Todd Gurley going back to Georgia. And, there's just a lot for us to talk about over the next 2 weeks. And we're just kind of scratching the surface on it.
All right, Joe, one more before I let you go. Yeah, that's the beauty of the Super Bowl, is that no matter how much we talk, we're just scratching the surface because it is media crazy. But I got to ask you, how many years is it going to be before Sean McVay can buy his own drinks in Los Angeles?
Well, it shouldn't, you know, I think if they sign that rumored extension, he should never sign, you know, he should never pay for his own drinks again. I mean, you know, the funny thing is he's always talking in the post game about, you know, I got to go unwind and have myself a beverage. And, you know, you get the sense that, you know, this is a man that, you know, should not, especially to these diehard Rams fans, you know, what he's accomplished over these past couple of years in between what he was 30 and now he's about to turn 33. He's accomplished more in that that span than a lot of us accomplished in our whole 30s. So, you know, when you saw the Coliseum totally empty and demoralized against Atlanta and Arizona, the end of that 2016 season, you see what he's done, you know, in such a short time. It's with a lot of the same players. You know, the guy's legit. No wonder everyone's trying to find somebody in the Sean McVay model. So,
you know, Joe, of all the fun stuff we're going to have in the next couple of weeks, I had to do a column last night, the top five storylines for Super Bowl 53. My number one storyline, the headline they came up with, was Luke Skywalker meets Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
He is going to get a lesson from the master. The Force has been with him to this point. We know that. So we shall see what happens. Hey, I really appreciate you taking time out for us tonight. Joe Curley, he covers the Rams for the Ventura County Star. You can follow him on Twitter at VCS. Joe Curley. We're going to take a very quick break here. When we are back, we've got more of your phone calls. Mike and Ricky hung on. Why don't you join them? 312-644-6767. Again, the phone number 312-644-6767. Not doing anything for the next 45 minutes, but talking to you guys. So give me a call. We're back to talk in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Third down and 10 at the 13. Drops back, arches a pass down the near side. Broken up at the 5-yard line. Beautifully timed by Roby Coleman in the secondary on a pass down the near sideline. They were looking for Tommy Lee Lewis. And it's an incompletion with a collision literally at the time the ball was coming right between the two combatants down the near sideline at about the 5. No flag, incomplete, and the field goal unit has taken the field for New Orleans, and the boos are cascading down here at the Superdome.
There was plenty of, I felt like, opportunities for us offensively that we didn't take advantage of. I mean, listen, it was a hard-fought game on both sides. You know, credit to them. They're a great team. They're great staff. And so we knew this was going to be a battle. We knew it was going to come down to the wire. You know, felt like there were some more plays that we could have made. So regardless of a call or no call or what, I felt like there were other opportunities for us that I wish we could have taken advantage of.
So that was the call in real time from Kevin Harlan on Westwood One. I work games with Kevin. I've worked games with Kevin this year. He is one of the best. Now, that booth is about 8 stories up in the Superdome, so he's looking down from a long way. But you heard his call. It was in real time. He didn't see the interference. It was obviously a bad call. Nobody is debating that. But the official was not the only person in the stadium who missed it. That was also Drew Brees talking about the call afterwards. And it just does my heart good to hear somebody with real class, because what Drew Brees said is absolutely true. Yeah, it was a bad call. Yes, the Saints got jobbed. It's still the Saints' fault they didn't take advantage of the other opportunities they had to win the football game. And that's the distinction that people have to understand. Hats off to Drew Brees for everything he's done in his NFL career and for the way he handled that yesterday in his post-game presser with the response that you just heard. 312-644-6767 is our phone number. Ricky has been hanging out in Deerfield forever. Ricky, I appreciate you hanging on. How you doing?
No, I'm doing good, Hob. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Okay, so I'll be honest. I have seen the questionable or apparently not so questionable pass interference. I recorded the game yesterday because I was working. I just haven't had a chance to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what your attitude is in general towards replay I'm a big fan of it. If somebody makes a good throw and a receiver makes a great catch, it's a shame that the referee makes a bad call and negates what should be a good play. So the NFL obviously has plays that are not reviewable, correct? We've heard that. No, right. The play's not reviewable.
Right.
Okay, so they know the set plays that can be reviewed and the plays that can't be. Maybe they should tinker with, and again, this is a league that for 50 years didn't believe in instant replay and overturning a call because it didn't exist for a long time in general. But why don't they potentially look at, you throw the red flag when you're challenging a call, okay? And you know there could be a repercussion. You're going to lose a timeout if you're wrong. As painful as it could be, referees do make mistakes, and sometimes the mistake is they don't make any call. Why don't they entertain the concept of, you know what, you get this once a game. We'll call it the golden towel or whatever. And if you're wrong, it's got to be – you're only going to throw it when you know – the only guy who didn't see the play correctly was the guy who didn't call it. So you're going to throw the no call. Hey, he clearly got his face mask grabbed. I don't know how none of you guys saw it, but you obviously didn't. And the repercussion might be, okay, here's the deal. You can challenge it, but if you're wrong, it might cost you all your timeouts. It might cost you the possession of the ball. You're only going to throw it when you know, trust me, you're going to see it my way. I don't know why they wouldn't entertain that.
Well, Ricky, there's a few reasons. I think now you're going to create controversy over what the penalty is. I think the real concern is that with two plays in particular, offensive holding and pass interference, nobody really knows what they are anyway. They're not called the same way on two consecutive plays, and I think that's a big part of the problem. And now this one, when you see it, it's blatant. There's no question about it. It's pass interference. Nobody is arguing that. But this doesn't happen often. And so what we're now talking about is if you can replay anything you want, how many replays are there going to be? And so what is the right answer? Bill Belichick has been arguing for the last 4 or 5 years that the only fair way to do this is you stay with the current rules that each team gets two challenges per half. And if they win a challenge, they get one back. So the most you could have is three challenges and a half, but you'd have to be right on all three. And his argument is you can challenge any play you want. Shouldn't matter what it is, you know, whether it's a scoring play or a turnover or pass interference or holding, but you only get those three challenges. And I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Now, you know, the problem is as I said, no two officials call offensive holding the same way. No two officials. I mean, you could have called pass interference on every play in both those games yesterday by the written, you know, language of the rule. And so I know that's what concerns the league about this. And I think they're worried about the slippery slope if you start fixing some pass interference and not others. But I don't have a better answer because what happened yesterday shouldn't stand. When it is that blatant, It just because it's normally not a reviewable play doesn't mean you should be forced to just let it go. So that would be my suggestion. Leave it exactly the way it is in terms of how many challenges you get and the way that you can keep them or lose them. But challenge whatever you want, you know, and use them smart strategically, because you could very well end up in a situation where if that was the case, they'd have gotten there and Peyton wouldn't have had a challenge left. You just don't know, you know. So that's what I would do. But nobody's asked me recently. So 312-644-6767 is our phone number. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers, Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now at nusports.com. Has also waited forever in Forest Park. And Mike, I do appreciate it. How you doing?
Good, Hub. Enjoy your work as per always. But I think you're a little bit off base on the Sean Payton play calling right before the non-call on the pass interference, because there was a minute 58 left when they started that series and he threw the pass. Mm-hmm. The Rams had two timeouts. So even if they ran the ball three times, the Saints would have turned the ball over after the field goal, theoretically, with like a minute left. And, you know, Mahomes ran down the field and got a field goal in 32 seconds in the second game. So it wouldn't have been automatic that there wouldn't have been any time left if they would have run the ball three times.
No, I said there would be time left, but I don't know. There wouldn't have been a minute 40 left. I know that.
No, there would have been like a minute left.
I don't even think it would have been that much because you get time off the clock when you run the plays. I think they would have been able to run it down because then you've got the field goal kick and the kickoff as well. I think they could have gotten it down to about 35 to 40 seconds. But, yeah, there would have been time left. There's no question about that.
Okay, thanks, Hub.
All right, thank you. Appreciate the call. Let's see. Who is up? That was Mike. So that means it's time for Joe. Joe is out in Peru. Joe, how you doing?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for asking.
Sure.
I'm usually one of the lessons boys on the midnight shift, and usually I'm the two question Joe, but I actually came up with three right now, not to mention what I had on my mind. But I'm like an agent for a big prospect out in the farmland. Mm-hmm. I'm a good friend of Tom Fair, Rick and his mom, the restaurant.
Sure.
I'm a big Bears fan from 85. They all signed a couple weeks before my mom passed. They signed a shirt for him, the 85 Bears for my mom, and I'll never forget them for that.
Yes.
And, okay, I got the Rams question. Now, three of them, your producer already answered me. The most simple question, don't be afraid to ask, and you had the answer, and he did too. Well, he had to ask, where was the Rams in the Super Bowl going to be at this year? Well, he told me Atlanta, and that's great. Now, the other question I had for you or Les, my phone, the charge is going on. That's why I'm on the phone right now. You remember the Super Bowl team of Rams? I was going to ask Les if he was there when they won the Super Bowl. And I was there in spring training at McComb, Western Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't surprise me. They won the Super Bowl. Their receivers, just like my friend did, I'm going to try to get him to see Coach Patrick Fitzgerald, the coach at Western. And I'm writing a book. Yeah, don't mention it on the air, Joe. Stress and stress and signs and solutions is dedicated to the police officers last year. Okay, the question, stay on the point here. The point is the Rams team that won the Super Bowl, do you think they're just as good?
The Rams team that won the Super Bowl in 1999, the greatest show on turf, Kurt Warner did not win the MVP that year. Marshall Faulk won the MVP that year. The receivers you're talking about are Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. It was a truly great football team. They played very good defense as well. This offense is not as good as that offense was because Jared Goff is not Kurt Warner yet. There's no way that you could compare Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins to Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce, both of whom will eventually be in the Hall of Fame. Marshall Faulk and Todd Gurley were fairly comparable. Orlando Pace, a Hall of Fame offensive tackle, was on that team. The Rams' defense didn't have as much star power, but it actually had better numbers that year. So, and then remember that that team also went back to another Super Bowl 2 years later and lost it with Kurt Warner. So I don't think this team is quite – and then you've got Dick Vermeil and Sean McVay. McVay is a brilliant young coach, but Vermeil had a lot of success over the years. Interesting similarities in style, though. Definitely an offense-first team. I think they, you know, they stack up fairly well, Joe, but if I had to pick one, I would take that Rams Super Bowl team over this team.
Okay, you've been very helpful, Hulk. I've been listening to you for years, and thanks for all your knowledge, just like with Les, and thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Okay,
I do appreciate it. I'm not sure that being compared to Les is a compliment. No, I'm kidding. Lester, you know that. The grabber, I'm sure, is listening as he gets ready to go to work tonight. But, Joe, I do appreciate the call, and I know Les appreciates the audience. Let's take one more before we break. Mike is in Valparaiso. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Hub. Hey, I wanted to highlight something that seems to have gotten is being ignored, and it just drives me crazy that we now have instant replay where there are different rules when replay is applied than if the play is called correctly. That, to me, is a travesty. And I'm pointing to the Anthony Miller play in the Bears game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a former official, so it's not that I have, you know, sour grapes or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. The correct call was he caught the ball. He fumbled the ball, they blew it incomplete, an inadvertent whistle gives the ball back to the team that last possessed it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the correct call. But because it was instant replay, a completely different set of rules applied. Now, to me, that's ridiculous.
Time out, because I'm not sure I agree with your premise here. What the ruling was, I don't think they did blow the whistle. Nobody picked up the football from either team. The ball laid on the turf for like 4 or 5 seconds, and the official finally picked it up, and they went back. That was before they knew there was going to be a replay challenge. So what the ruling was, wasn't that there was a whistle, but that there was no clear recovery of the fumble, and that's why the ball went back to the Bears at the original line of scrimmage.
I don't think you're correct on that. They blew it. They blew the whistle because it was ruled incomplete.
Well, that was not their explanation during the game, Mike, and it wasn't their explanation after the game. So I can't argue the point with you, but I know that at the time and afterwards the officials explained it as I just explained it to you.
But if an official calls a play incomplete, he's going to blow the whistle. I mean, that's just...
But, Mike, what I'm telling you is that they said that they didn't call it incomplete. They said that they called it a catch and a fumble, but that nobody recovered the fumble. That's what they said. I can't tell you what they actually did, but I know that was the explanation after the game.
Well, I don't know. I think you're getting it wrong on this one. But
right. Mike, it wouldn't be the first time. I can tell you that. Listen, I appreciate the call, and I understand where you're coming from. Obviously, replay and officiating are hot-button topics right now. So, and Mike is a former official, so I'm sure he knows what he's talking about. But I'm guessing a good part of our audience remembers that during the course of that game, because it obviously was a crucial play, that was the explanation, that it was ruled a catch with no clear recovery of the fumble. And that's why it went back to the line of scrimmage. And they claim that there's some old, obscure rule in the rule book that made that correct. I know that they had whichever former official was on TV that night explained it that way. That's at least what we were told. So, you know, Mike, I could have it wrong, but I know that's what the explanation from the league was. 312-644-6767. Anthony, Marty, I'm going to get to you guys in just a minute. I got to take a quick break here, but really enjoying your calls, talking to all of you. We're going to do more of it here on The Score in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back, everybody. I don't know where the time is going. We've been in here for 2:45 already. Got about an hour and 20 left. I am Hub Arker, sitting in for Lawrence Holmes this evening. Lawrence has the night off, but I believe we'll be back with you tomorrow night. Yes, Lawrence will be in from 6 to 10 tomorrow night. I'll be here until 10 tonight. And then Julie DeCaro will take over with the best sports talk in town at the number one sports station, 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Our phone number, 312-644-6767. And really enjoying visiting with you guys this evening. Let's get back to the phone lines and welcome Marty in out in Elgin. Marty, how you doing?
All right. How are you, sir?
Good, thank you.
Great, great. I just want to say real quick, I really do. I'm glad I got a chance to talk to you. Respect your opinion, and I love listening to you.
Thank you.
But my point is, and I just want to bounce this off you, it's been irking me since, of course, the Bears game. I'm over it, where I think a lot of us are. But one of the aspects of it, and it's a weird phenomenon that I'm just curious what your impression is on it, the idea of starters who may have been injured for long periods of time, and I'm going to use the Kyle Long, for example. There's a guy who's out multiple games. His backup has been there. He's been there for these wins. He's been there for what they've been doing. He's been in the trenches. He's playing. He's playing with these guys to his left and to his right, and they work with each other, and they learn how to play with each other, especially when you have an audible, when things change, when they're not what they're supposed to be, what we expect them to be because we've pre-done these plays and we're trying to go along with a book or with the story. But when things change, and then here it is, it's a big game, but all of a sudden, just because the guy's ready to go, or he may be ready to go, but he's out, we're going to unplug him and plug him in. I've heard you say a lot, yeah, you want to go with what's the best, what's going to give you the best thing, you know, to win. But does that really, you know, does that really put you at the best, in the best position to win? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm curious what you think about that. That's all. It's one of the things that kind of I thought was an interesting thing.
Well,
that's all.
Yeah, Marty, and I think the answer is each situation in and of itself is different. I mean, you got to look at the individual comparisons and matchups. What players are we talking about? In the particular case that you mentioned, Kyle Long is far and away the best offensive lineman on the Chicago Bears. There is no comparison of his abilities and Brian Witzman's abilities, who went to the bench when Kyle came back. Witzman had played okay. He hadn't been bad, but he hadn't been great. Kyle Long came back and wasn't himself, but was immediately better than Witzman. He made some plays that made a difference. So in that case, when the gap is that great, I think you do. You go with the better player. Now, there could be other situations. And, you know, the Bears faced one in that last year. I think it was with Cutler when Josh McCown came in and played so well, and yet they went back to Cutler. You certainly could have argued that they shouldn't have there. And I could have gone along with that argument. You know, it was more a perception than a reality with Jay Cutler. I'm trying to think of other situations this year. You know, Allen Robinson goes down for a couple weeks. He comes back. The Bears have got some other talented wide receiver, but you got to get Allen Robinson back on the field immediately. You know, Khalil Mack comes back. Obviously, you're not going to let him sit, even though Aaron Lynch and Leonard Floyd and Isaiah Irving were playing pretty well. So it's just about which players we're talking about. And how big the gap is between the returning star and the currently subbing reserve.
Oh, that's great. It was just, like I said, the situation. I just thought it wouldn't have worked out, especially then you got your tight end all of a sudden disappears on you, mm-hmm. and you see that they tried to go with it, and he probably worked all week long on those plays and those plays only. And then all of a sudden, you got to change, and maybe he just wasn't ready for that. You know, but you're right. There's a lot of things that are factor in there. But I appreciate talking to you, and you have a great night.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you for the call. Yeah, I mean, Trey Burton not going in the wild card game, that's a whole different story because not only is Ben Broniker and Daniel Brown not Trey Burton, they hadn't worked all week. And so, yeah, that's a very different situation. That was just an unfortunate timing of that injury. Let's go down to Bourbonnais and welcome Anthony in. Anthony, how you doing?
Doing good, sir. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Good. Yeah, I just had a quick question. I hadn't heard anybody talk about this, but if the NFL opens up instant replay to non-calls, for instance, like yesterday's game, if they throw a challenge flag for a pass interference call, what would stop the opposing team from finding defensive or, you know, offensive holding or something like that, and then they throw a challenge and now you have competing challenges?
Well, I mean, theoretically, if they're challengeable plays, it could happen. But you cannot challenge pass interference, and you cannot challenge offensive holding.
No, I'm talking about in the future.
Well, yeah, no, okay.
Because everybody's talking about doing this, mm-hmm. but it could be a can of worms if you open this up that you could have, you know, everybody's video guys checking every play.
You're absolutely
looking
right.
For something to throw a flag on.
No, you're absolutely right. Now, what wouldn't be a concern is it wouldn't matter what other video guys were doing. They only use the network feeds of that game. And so either it's on the various camera angles that whatever network is showing the game has or not. But you make a very good point. I mean, it's there is no rule that I'm aware of that says both coaches can't throw their flag on the same play. But it has to be on something reviewable, and there really is very little that is reviewable, and I guess that's why we haven't seen it to this point. But it is a potential collateral damage, if you will, of changing the rule. So you make a very good point. Thank you for the call.
All right, thanks.
All right, Anthony, thank you. Let's get to Mike in Norridge. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
By far the best station for football in the city, number one.
Thank you.
Football talk. And I just want to, that one caller who was talking about the play, he actually was right. I'm not calling you wrong, but he was actually right. It was ruled an incomplete pass. It was basically blown dead. It was challenged to see if it was completed or incomplete. What the ruling came back was the ball was a completed pass. He did make a football move. He fumbled the ball, but since nobody picked it up, we're putting it back to the line of scrimmage because we can't advance the ball without somebody picking it up after the fumble. So initially it was ruled incomplete, and they just walked away. They blew the whistle, walked away, incomplete. That was done. That's partially why I think none of the players ran and got the ball, because they kind of just waited. It's incomplete. It's done. The
okay.
play's over.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. So yes, you're right on the ruling. When they came back, they said, well, wait a minute. This was a completed pass. Nobody picked up the fumble. Therefore, we have to bring the ball back to the line of scrimmage. I don't know what point he was trying to get to.
Well,
I don't know,
Mike. But, I can't argue with either one of you, but I guess that was my problem: is I didn't know where he was going because,
yeah.
in the end, it was called correctly by the rule.
Yeah, exactly.
And as you explain it, that sounds right to me. I do know the explanation we got is that it was a completed pass, but because there was no clear recovery of the fumble, by rule it goes back to the line of scrimmage. But as you explain it, it does sound right to me that that's why it was challenged in the first place, because they, well, yeah, why else would there have been a challenge? It wasn't inside of 2 minutes. So I'm sure are right about that. Great.
So, and the last thing I want to say is, I mean, I don't know if you agree with me, but after watching all the playoffs all the way through the championship games, I'm kind of excited about the Bears next year, because I really feel that they could have beaten any one of these teams that came up to the Super Bowl. They could have beaten them. They did beat them in their regular season. But I think they would have a chance against anybody in these playoffs. So if they stay healthy next year, cross your fingers, I think they're a viable, they're a team that can make it. So it's kind of exciting.
Mike, I agree with you. I thank you for the call. I mean, you've watched the last 2 weeks. I certainly haven't seen a team they can't beat. We've seen several teams that they actually did beat. And as you just point out, you got to stay healthy. You got to hope that there's no big transition from Vic Fangio to Chuck Pagano. But you also have to assume that they're going to get better. Some of these young players are going to get a year better. You know, they're going to add some more players. They don't have a lot of roster decisions to make as far as free agency. So I think Bears fans should be extremely excited for the 2019 season. And now we'll watch as the offseason develops. Let's get to Belmont Heights and welcome Tom in. Tom, how you doing?
Always a pleasure hearing you on the air, Hub. You're the best there is.
Thank you, Tom.
Just wanted to run these names by you, and this is going back when you were a younger man, because I'm a little older than you are. For color commentators for football, Paul Chrisman was one, and Paul Honing. What did you think about their work on the air?
You know, Tom, I certainly know who Paul Chrisman and Paul Horning are. I know that they did work on the air. I was a young fan at the time, but still quite a ways away from... I never even planned to be in this business. It happened by accident. Different story. And so I'd be lying if I told you I remembered that much about it.
I'm so glad that you chose it, because you're the best at what you do.
Oh, thank you.
How about announcers of today? And one of them, I'm afraid, is partially retired, and I loved him immensely. Howard David, do you know if he's still around?
Howard, I worked with Howard shortly after I left the Bears booth and went over to Westwood One, and an outstanding play-by-play guy. Did, I want to say, Jets games for a number of years and did stuff at Westwood for us. I don't honestly know if he's still working or not, but an outstanding play-by-play guy. I am biased because he's one of my best friends in the business, but I think the best radio NFL play-by-play guy in the business is still Wayne Larrabee, even though he's in Green Bay. And another dear friend of mine, Jeff Joniak, I know would support that. I'm not choosing one friend over another. Wayne is that good. As far as the color commentators, I think James Lofton, who I've worked with for years, is absolutely one of the best in the business. Loved it when he was the lead guy on Westwood, and I got to work with him. It's unfortunate that he's kind of buried at CBS now. We did have him on one Bears game this year, and it was absolutely one of the best. But James does an outstanding job. Dan Fouts does an outstanding job as a color commentator. I think Tony Romo, as I said, has gotten really good, really fast.
He's the best right now.
I think Aikman's good, too. I like Troy Aikman a lot. As a matter of fact, I'd have a hard time picking between Aikman and Romo, only because Romo probably gives you a couple more insights, but Troy is very unemotional and very analytical about it. The one problem I have with Romo, he just gets a little too excited sometimes.
I know that. You've got the personalities right on the money. The last one I want to ask you about, and he's my favorite right now, is Kevin Harlan. Is he not the most exciting announcer on radio? For football?
Well, he's one of my current partners. Most of my Westwood work, I get about 8 to 9 games a year, and most of them are with Kevin. He is a dear friend. His brother Brian is a dear friend of mine, and so I'm going to admit I'm a little biased. But in terms of painting the picture, in terms of setting the scene, in terms of telling you everything that's going on in the stadium and around the stadium, as well as calling the game clean and clear, Kevin is absolutely one of the best, and that's why he will be on the Super Bowl for Westwood One again this year for, I don't know how many years in a row it is now, but yes, Kevin is one of the very best in the business.
But You're most beloved. Thank you so much for your time.
Tom, thank you very much for your call. Guys, again, I've got a special guest coming up at 9. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk a little baseball. Cubs convention was this weekend. Gonzo's going to stop by. So, Dan, Kyle, I would love to talk to you. You can hang tight and just sit back and relax and listen. You can call me back in about 15, 20 minutes. But we are going to take a break here. We're going to get to Mark Gonzalez. Gonzo covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune. And then for the last half hour, 40 minutes, going to take your calls on whatever subject you would like. We'll get back to the text line as well at 67011. It's all ahead. We got a full hour left here at The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.